Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. We have a fantastic interview here with Dr. Dwayne Edwards. How are you doing today, sir?
Man, I am blessed in this lovely Portland weather. I'm good.
It's not cold. It's dark. It's not raining. It's a little gray.
Yep.
It's all good stuff. Mike, how you doing out in Houston?
I mean, I wish I can tell you it was something different out here, but I think you guys in Portland have thrown some of that weather my way because I look outside, it is gray and not raining, but like misting outside and like 40 degrees. I'm like, this isn't natural. Yeah, but I'm good, man. I can't complain.
I think we can all take a second to appreciate having a love for sneakers and then having times of the year where the weather doesn't quite cooperate with different materials right. and designs.
Right.
So a lot of clunky. Let's just get right into it. So we have to start off episodes with a series called Rockin' and Coppin', kind of like what we have on our feet and what we're looking to kind of add to what's on our radar in the sneaker world. So I'll obviously go ahead and get us started. I've been rocking these Response CLs since Adidas gifted me with them for Pride last year. In my opinion, you cannot go wrong with a white mesh shoe unless you're in Portland this time of the year. unless you're here this time of the year.
Get a plastic bag on top of those bad boys right now.
You got to wear them. Hit them with a shoe deflector. So
a little sealant.
But, you know, a little LA Fitness parking lot, I'm not really seeing the outsides all that much. So they stayed pretty clean. Nice. And then when it comes to Coppin, what am I looking to buy? Man, I'm still really interested in those white and baby blue Anthony Edwards 2s. The AE2 was something different. Yeah. I love that design language. We might be able to go into that a little bit. But the AE2 has been captivated. It's captivated my eyes, man. It's a gorgeous looking shoe.
Yeah.
That I can't quit looking at. Mike, how about you, man?
Yeah, man. So didn't go too far today. Just hit the grocery store, but like Robbie, I'm just a glutton for punishment because I broke out a white mesh shoe in the autumn winter time here. But the Evo SL, it's like my go-to. Running to the grocery store, this sucker's super comfortable, and I love the way it looks. And yeah, it's not that white anymore, but I mean, it's doing its job, so I love it. But the shoe on my radar is, I think, one is going to last in the winter time. You know, the dirty months, the Harden 10. Like, I'm waiting for that one to come out. I love that. The TPU on the outside, the kind of wavy look they went to. And I'm super excited to see that one.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. What about you, Dwayne? What you rocking, man?
I just took them off my feet. So I took these. I started wearing these. This is the Boost, the second version.
Yeah.
I've been wearing these inside of my house every day since November 2020.
Oh, dang.
So, see, I took the cage off to make it slip on. So I just made it a slip on, but these are my go-tos that I'm always in when I'm inside the home, walking around. Nobody else wears shoes in my house, but these are the only shoes that's in my house on my feet.
It's a slipper now, man. It's a slipper. It's a
slip on. Super comfortable, man. Super, super comfortable. And then old school wise, I would say what I haven't been able to get my hands on is a pair of the, Adidas Superstars with the metal toe.
Oh, metal toe.
They came out with a chrome toe. They came out with a gold toe, a copper toe. This was huge, but maybe about five years ago. Haven't been able to get a hold of them yet.
They will come across your desk someday.
I hope so. In a 12, I hope so.
Put it out there. Let everybody hear. We need a 12 in the metal toe.
Yes.
Superstars. Come on.
But the Ultra Boost, we've spoken many times about just the longevity of comfortable footwear and how the Ultra Boost kind of, in all its variants, right? You can change the upper, you can play with the formula, but the dish that is the Ultra Boost is unbeatable in just everyday comfort, man. It might be too much for some people, but if your foot likes Boost, it's a winner.
Yeah, I don't see how you can't, honestly. I remember being at the Adidas Village when they first were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting in the room and the design team came by and they had them. They showed them to me. And the marketing team came and they were like, yeah, the marketing team was kind of a little bitter because they couldn't change the color of the midsole. And I'm like, why change the color? Like, that becomes the iconic feature mm-hmm. and the iconic visual. Let it be what it is instead yeah. of trying to change it to make it look like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where designers and marketers always kind of bump heads, is because we like the purity of the form follows the function, mm-hmm. right? Instead of making it look the same, why not just let it be what it is and let that become the visual standard and design language? And so that ended up happening. Now they still found a way to make it a different color and wrap yeah. it and do some other things. So marketing did win on that one, but for a little while, design won.
Well, sneaker is like aesthetics,
the color.
Yeah, I like the white boost.
White walls on a sneaker are undefeated.
Yeah,
like
100%.
You can, yeah, white walls and gum outsoles. You put one or two of those together, but just the first Ultra Boost with the black and purple, man. Right. Seeing that for the first time, I know Mike loves them too.
Oh yeah, I mean, clearly I still have a pair of the 1.0s floating around. I think I've gone through my fair share of Ultra Boost, like to the ground, and I love that shoe. That's a constant in my sneaker like collection. At some point, I have to have at least one pair.
Oh yeah, I got multiple pairs, both here in Portland and in Detroit. Yeah. Same, you know, I'm wearing them in the house and outside, so it's my comfortable go-to.
There you go.
I don't want to go down an Ultra Boost rabbit hole, but I just saw the Adidas employee store. We were buying Christmas presents for family members, and I saw the first time seeing a Gore-Tex Ultra Boost, and I was like, ooh. It's kind of counterintuitive, but I could see the vision. The walls were still white. The midsole was still white on that topic. So,
but it's wonderful.
Change so many things.
That's the important part.
Should not change that. So yeah. Actually, let's kind of segue into what athlete, artist, or kind of musician bridged the gap for you between sneaker design and pop culture to kind of help build this love that's now created a college and so much. And
I'm old school, man. It's Jordan, man. I mean, for me, I grew up in Inglewood, California. And unfortunately, I witnessed Michael win his first chip against my Lakers. that was the last game I snuck into at the Forum. But to me, it was MJ on the design side. I wasn't a fan of MJ because he played for the Bulls, and I'm a Lakers fan. But design wise, like, the three is still one of my favorite shoes because it just defied basketball design, sneaker mm-hmm. design. And even still today, you still wouldn't do some of the things that they've done on that shoe. But now it's dictated what culture kind of becomes from sneaker design. And then obviously, you know, Spike Lee gets a hold of it. And then the musicians get a hold of it. And then the entertainers get a hold of it. Like, so to me, like, it was MJ in the whole Jordan franchise. And then, of course, I got a chance to do it for a while. So work with him for 10 years. So,
yeah, so your design language was definitely never bold. While working on that line. So hearing you say that the three things that they wouldn't do now on that shoe then, did that kind of influence what you wanted to do as someone who designs shoes, kind of push the envelope?
Yeah. I mean, again, that's always the push-pull with designers and marketers is we are, as designers, we're conditioned to think two years or more ahead and predict the future and not afraid to be wrong or right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so on the other side, the push pull is on the merchandising side, the marketing side, they're more conservative and they don't want to be wrong because they, you know, they'll get blamed for being wrong. Designers always get blamed for being wrong. And so what I always tell my team and even I tell my students, I said, you know, when you do something great, it's your fault. When you do something bad, it's your fault. So accept it. Because if something does amazing, you're going to have a whole team of people standing next to you taking credit for it. But when something goes bad, you're going to be all by yourself. Nobody is going to be standing next to you saying, oh, yeah, I was a part of that failure. But they're going to be a part of the success. And so I think as a designer, you just have to learn to accept both and be confident in failing just as much as you're confident in succeeding.
Well, with sneakers being so, I guess, it's very subjective to a person, right? Everyone likes, yeah, I can like one thing, you can like a different thing. What would be considered an actual failure if there's an actual audience for it? Is it as a designer? I know marketing is looking at the dollars, but for a designer, well,
everybody's looking at the dollars, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, designers don't necessarily, so that's a funny question actually, because designers don't look at success as it made money.
Yeah.
It's more of, did the other designers like it?
Yeah.
Did the other designers appreciate you did something different than everybody else? Now, it may have bombed at retail, but the ability to do something that nobody else has done and make people uncomfortable, like, that's the designer's job. If it makes money, fantastic.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, you still kind of did your job, because there's a designer code. Like, we're all looking at each other's work and see, okay, did you really go in, or did you mail that shit in? Like, did you just do what I just told you to do, or did you actually really try to move the needle a bit? Right?
Did you bare minimum, or like, boom, expand on the world?
Absolutely. And again, that's the push pull with being a designer too, is you never see how many people have something to say about your creation and change it. But it still goes off into the world with your name on it.
Yeah.
But you didn't finish the whole thing. Like, it's very rarely ever your complete vision when it comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when it does fail, more times than not, is because you didn't push it far enough. It was too comfortable. It was too familiar, right? Yeah. And so that's really the hard part on the design side, is it's, you never give birth to something and fully raise it and dress it and send it out to the world. Somebody else is always revising it. And you got to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Oof. That's so true.
I can tell you, the best work you probably will never, ever see, because it's in the archives.
See, that's where I want to go. I need to go see
it. It's the original versions of product.
Yeah.
Versus the one that came to retail. Like, some brand should do just an original version collection of the same one that came to retail, but the original, the first prototype version of it versus the one that went to retail, completely different in most cases.
See, that's, I love that concept of, if it's good, it's on you. If it's bad, it's on you.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, it's so true. But I don't want to keep going to, well, we can keep going to Anthony Edwards, but they started that campaign and that design language. I'm here, I'm young,
I love it.
Boisterous.
I love it.
And if that didn't work, it's on him and the design and the team. But it did work, and now it is on them, and it's now blossomed. And now there's a whole kind of like, there's an aura, as the kids would say, an aura around AE.
Yeah, I think more importantly, it matched his personality.
100%.
Right? Mm-hmm. It matched his personality. And then even more importantly, he's backing that shit up on the court. Like, if he was a buster, like, if he wasn't doing it, like, he'll get so much scrutiny and so much coming at him that he wouldn't be able to recover from it. But he's putting in the work.
Yeah.
And so it's rare when the magic of the shoe and the athlete's persona actually, and the campaign actually matches.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very rare.
Because you can make the tool, the shoe, but the athlete then has to go execute.
Yeah.
100%.
It's a beautiful thing when they both happen together. You get generational, you get stuff that generations remember.
100%.
Right. So,
I think the beauty of Anthony's, you know, one and two, is that you know the shoe without seeing the logo.
That's what I love about it. You don't have to see a logo. You can see it from the TV watching an NBA game and know exactly what it is, as opposed to trying to figure out, hey, what is that? What brand is that? You know it's the AE.
You know who it is. Yep. You know what it is.
This is not
his product.
Mm-hmm. It's not a Jordan focused podcast one bit, but to that same vein, you see a Jordan 19 on Carmelo's feet on TV, that design language resonates. It can be a foot away from the shoes, or it can be on TV 1,000 miles away. A striking design language will just bring you into connection with the athlete, and especially if they're putting on in the shoe too.
Yeah. Design language and color blocking, man. You shouldn't design around a logo. That was the difference between Jordan and Nike, was you always saw the Nike logo before you saw the shoe.
Yeah.
And then you saw the shoe before you saw the logo in Jordan. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even if you took a look at, I would even challenge you guys to look at your own personal history of the top 10 top 20 sneakers that you really like, you'll probably recognize the logo isn't that big on them.
Mm-mm. Oh, now I gotta go sit back and think about this, because now I'm curious.
It's not going to be the feature is not going to be the logo.
No, so like this color blocking, right? The Harden Volume 1. Yep. I remember Lonzo Ball, UCLA, black and white, simple color blocking.
Yep.
Bold. And the logo, I couldn't tell you if it's on the back. I think it's on the pull tab. You can't even identify where the logo is. It's the, yeah.
Well,
that's like a really powerful point.
The D-Rose 1.5 is up there. You get the logo on the back. You barely see it on the heel. One of my favorite shoes ever. So now I'm like, got this mental Rolodex going. You got me really thinking now.
Yeah. So. You're not new. How do I segue into this? You have like, this is not anything. Discussing design language is nothing new. For our new listeners, though, who might not be familiar with you, you're the founder of Pencil Lewis College Detroit. Mm-hmm. Started originally out here in Portland, but is now located in Detroit. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Pencil does? Is it people connect the dots from what they were just hearing you talk about?
Yeah, I'll give you the short version. So after 25 years as a designer in the industry, I decided to walk away from it and create a small academy in downtown Portland to teach kids how to design sneakers the right way. And so that's where Pencil came from. The name comes from the instrument that I've been using forever, a number two pencil. So I looked in a dictionary. And I looked up I was trying to think of the name. What do I want to call my school? I didn't want to call it the Duane Edwards School. That didn't work. and so I was like, shit, I always use a number two pencil. So I always look up words in the dictionary to fully understand the definition of them. And so this one, I looked up the word pencil and I saw the phonetic spelling being P-E-N-S-O-L. And I'm like, oh, like if I just add an E on that, the first three letters is the instrument and the last four letters is the industry. So that's where the name Pencil comes from. And so we're the first footwear design academy in the world that specifically was focused on sneakers. And we were downtown Portland for the first 10 years. COVID happened. We shut it down. Well, the world shut down. A friend of mine, Pencil alumni, he told me about this historically black college in Detroit that closed. And so I went to Detroit, met with the family and acquired the college, reopened it, merged what I was doing in Portland, moved everything from Portland to Detroit, reopened an HBCU. That's focused on design. So we're the only design-focused HBCU in the country. And we're doing the same things that we've done when we were here in Portland, now in Detroit, on a much bigger scale.
Yes.
But to date, we've supplied the sneaker industry with close to 1,000 footwear designers from all the top brands. And I think Adidas has close to 100 of our former students in the last 15 years.
That's awesome. Do you have an extra sense of pride with it being a HBCU, just being able to, help push, you know, yeah, that's
100%. It was I love Portland. Like this is home. I mean, Inglewood is my original home, but this is my retirement home. So I didn't want to leave Portland. But the opportunity, so first of all, no one has ever reopened a historically black college before. Mm-hmm.
Reopening a college, that's a crazy sentence.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
One, reopen a college, and two, reopen a historically black college. And then there's only 102 of them in the country. Yeah. Being able to have the only one focused on design in one of the darkest cities in America, Detroit. and Detroit is the only city in America known or identified by the United Nations for the UNESCO City for Design. So there's 350 other cities around the world. Detroit is the only one that represents America for UNESCO, City for Design.
Oh, wow.
And so all of that alignment, I couldn't have created that any better. And so that's why we left Portland and go to Detroit. But we might show back up in Detroit. I mean, Portland.
Well, maybe I can physically see the move because I've been in Chinatown and I hang out down there a lot. The amount of space you probably went from a very small physical footprint you could have had to now having a whole campus. That's a no-brainer to go out there.
Yeah, we went from 15,000 square feet to 460,000 square feet on the water looking at another country.
What a jump.
What a jump. So I've had multiple friends actually attend Pensole when I was here in Portland. And this, the holidays got to us. We couldn't get to record this quite before Giving Tuesday. But in the spirit of giving back and Giving Tuesday, what's a piece of advice, not your favorite, but it's one that you like, that you would give to somebody looking to get into the sneaker creation process? Let's start with that. So piece of advice for someone looking to get into the sneaker design or just creation process.
Well, you know, I think one of the first mysteries to uncover is that everybody is creative on some level. You just have to identify where does your creativity lie?
Yeah.
It may not lie in you sketching in something. It may be you have a eye for color. You may have an eye for materials. You may have an eye for advertising campaigns, marketing campaigns. So creativity is the first thing. You know, everyone has it. I think if you're in a position to align something you're passionate about from a sneaker perspective and blend that with creativity, you'll find it faster. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is, like, let's just say if it is sneakers, but you'll find it faster. But I think one of the bigger misconceptions or things that people don't think about is there's a large contingent of folks that love sneakers, right?
Yes. Yep.
And they don't realize that they can actually get a job doing what they do, they pay to do right now, whether that's buy critique sneakers. Oh, that'd look better if it had this color on it. Well, that's a $75,000+ a year job right there. So it's identifying, okay, what part of your world of sneakers could you actually make money at if that's the path you want to go down? But I think the first piece is identifying whatever level of creativity you have and what could you apply to the sneaker culture that elevates it and makes it better.
I like that.
When you make the world smaller, it's easier to navigate. So once you have an idea of what you want your lane to be, it becomes less tedious to think about, oh, what am I going to do? Like what? Mm-hmm. That's great
100%.
Advice.
And sometimes it's right in front of you, man. Like or right on your feet. Like you look down at every damn day. So it is just a matter of finding it. I was blessed to find mine when I was 12. So been working out for me for a little while.
So in that same vein, what's the piece of advice you want to give somebody looking to make meaningful change within their community then, or within a community?
To me, I would say, this is a personal opinion.
Of course. Yeah.
I think you should leave any situation better than you found it.
Agree.
Mm-hmm. I mean, agree. Any situation. And if community is what you're passionate about, what is it about your community that you wish was different when you entered it? Mm-hmm. And then how can you make a small change first, right? Because sometimes we have big dreams and big grandiose plans. Sometimes it starts with a small thing. Like you can just paint a wall. You could paint a door. Like you could do something small. And when you get a taste of that success, then it could lead to something a whole lot larger. And then let that continue to fuel you to make sure, okay, I want to leave my footprint, pun intended, here. Right?
Yeah.
But I would say respectfully, like whatever it is that you want to make better, then when you received it, do that.
It can be as small as picking up a piece of trash where you are that you did not put there.
100%. Yeah.
So,
or buying somebody a trash can.
There you go.
So they don't throw it on the ground. Right?
Yes. Guiding somebody in the right direction. That's a lot of what it is.
Maybe once you get that feeling, you could then start once a month, you know, doing something in the park. So this, identification seems to be the theme of that then. Finding something.
Yeah, man.
And capitalizing.
Yeah, that. I mean, I think with the distractions of social media, we don't actually think much. and so I think just slowing your world down for a few minutes and just thinking about like, oh, what could I actually do something positive today?
Yeah.
To hate on the younger generation, but you saying you actually went or you actively use a dictionary to learn the definition of a word. That's a lost art. People do not know what that means.
They don't know what dictionaries are anymore.
I know they don't know what dictionaries are. Or even books, maybe.
That's a shame.
Yeah, but hey, hopefully one day they'll figure it out.
We'll get there again, hopefully.
We'll get there.
We're here to help teach. So
yeah,
you actually helped co-create what kind of brought this episode together. The Adidas Business Track.
Yeah.
You know, that's an initiative, from what I understand. You guys help close the gap between retailers and building the next generation of sneaker designers and people in the industry. So it sounds like in that first step really going is what Business Track helps with. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, it's I would say, one, I'm not taking the credit for that, the whole thing. You know, Eric Armand, who was a former Penso student in 2012, in our first Adidas class, actually, he actually then went on to get a job at Adidas and then spend 10 plus years at Adidas.
Oh, wow.
And so he had intricate understanding of Adidas as an organization and working in certain portions of the company. One of the things that was identified is sometimes, and I mentioned this a little earlier, people always think designers get the most shine and that's where that's your only contribution to this industry. In reality, the people who work retail are the most valuable employees that you don't have, actually. Is because they're right in front of, well, okay, I'm a shit on the young people a little bit. For those that actually go to a store these days and actually look at a shoe and hold it and decide to buy it based on what they saw in person and holding and try on, okay. So when you have those people are the first line of defense for your brand. Like, they see your customer every single day.
Yeah.
And so they have so much knowledge that they can actually contribute back to an organization that could feed the marketing and merchandising teams, that could feed the actual design teams, so they can make better predictions for what should happen moving forward.
Yeah.
And so being able to actually create a program within key retailers that still exist, that have physical stores that people walk into, being able to do that with key, you know, Adidas retailers and then highlight the staff that's already there, it actually did a few things. One, it actually showed the retailer that staff that's on site actually has way more knowledge and insights than maybe they even thought about the industry and business. And then it also gave the folks in the retail organization a chance to see more of the process before they actually see the physical product. Yeah. So being able to help them understand how product is created, it gives them even more knowledge when you actually walk into the store and you're asking them about product. But it also gives them a leg up for an opportunity for a corporate job, right? And so the Business Track really is the marrying of the key independent retailers that, you know, as you know, are disappearing nationwide, but Adidas has done a great job of feeding those key retailers and making sure they stay active. But being able to bring the corporate philosophies and processes into the stores for the reps to understand, oh, there's a bigger opportunity for me in this sneaker game beyond just selling product or working retail. Because I could tell you some of the best marketers and merchandisers and even designers at some time, in some cases, have started at retail.
Yeah. Well, this, I mean, I think, Robbie and I both worked sneaker retail. And I think everyone was like, if you want to get into the corporate side, starting retail, that's the best place to start. Yeah. And you mentioned social media. I feel like people have this, I don't know, this desire or this misconception, I should say, that if I just do it, get a bunch of people to follow me, I can get a corporate job at Adidas or fill in the blank. And I think people listening need to understand that. Get in the door where you actually handle shoes, be front-facing with customers to make that path for yourself. It makes more sense.
Yeah, man. I mean, okay, so I do understand some levels of what they're trying to do because, unfortunately, brands have celebrated people who have, I think they call them influencers, people that I think corporate America may have created that term for these fake people out there who actually seem knowledgeable and have all these friends and they really don't have any friends,
quote unquote.
And nobody follows them and no one pays attention to what they do. But somehow they've gained some fake community that made them important. Now, I'm not complaining about those folks or talking bad about those folks because some of them are way richer than I'll ever be. they figured out the hustle to make it work for them. But I think what you're seeing now, though, is a rebellion towards the fake influencer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think the consumer seeing through all those fake likes and fake community developments and all those things. And so I think people will start to understand authenticity lasts longer and authenticity will get you further than just having a fake visual profile for everyone to see and think that you're bigger than or more important than really what you are.
And doing real research, like when Mike and I worked at a House of Hoops, I felt like the reason why I quit working retail was I felt like there was a world behind the four walls I was within selling shoes, but I didn't know how to access it.
Yeah.
And what the business track seems like it does is get those really talented people that might have walked away because they're frustrated making, you know, minimum wage, like I was with sales,
right,
and they walk away, they don't understand there's an actual route through that wall.
Yep. And I think the important part to what the business track does is it's not like we're coming in and just dictating to them and like this is how it's done. No, they actually do it. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're just telling them what should be done. We're actually showing them in real time and actually having them participate in the product creation process.
That's awesome.
And represent their retailer at the same time, right? So it's not like, oh, we're just coming in and doing a clinic. We put them to work, man. Like we put them to work and we want to see, you know, what skill sets do they have? You know, what does the world of sneakers should look like for someone at Puffer Reds?
Yeah.
Right. What is that? What should that look like? You know, what should the product look like? What kind of creativity is coming out of Michigan? What kind of creativity is coming out of SoFi? Like what kind of creativity is coming out of these different places? Because those are the things that the brands pay attention to as well.
And they shouldn't be cookie cutter. They should all be different. Oh. It shouldn't be a stock clinic you run.
No, the beauty of it is we don't let it be cookie cutter, bro. Yeah. Like we challenge them to go a little bit deeper.
That's awesome.
Because I would honestly say the brands have gotten comfortable with, I would call some forms of sneaker creation, so to speak. They've gotten comfortable where I tell students all the time is if you don't like something, don't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Facts.
Yeah.
And the company will only do what you buy. And so if you buy, I don't want to put any companies on blast, but if you buy a sneaker based off of a burger restaurant and you think that that's lame, then somebody's buying it. That means some other companies think, oh, we should do that too. So when I think the process has gotten boring and lazy, that's why doing things like the business track, having people on site physically in real time saying, nah, let's go deeper with storytelling. Let's go deeper with cultural references. Let's go deeper so we can elevate the culture versus just mailing it in.
Yeah. And you now have a capsule of that with the community archive Zine that's just been released. Mm-hmm. So correct me if I'm wrong, that's the visualization of that successes and those successes with Puffer Reds and Soul Plate.
Absolutely.
And where you guys have been going through. So that's a really exciting memento for you to have forever now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm always a big fan of capturing the content and not capturing it through the lens of celebrating what we did, but just to show the proof of what happened.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think that's another level of authenticity for someone to understand, oh, this shoe came about because of this, not just because of some random, oh, I like this color purple or blue or whatever. Like, no, it came from this. And this is the reasoning behind it. But I think more importantly for Adidas, I think what's important for them to, the reason why I think this opportunity is really important for them to showcase is that they need to show more of what's really happening in real time. because then that gets the customer more engaged and more invested into the brand itself. And I don't think brands do enough of showing the behind the scenes of really what they're doing. Mm-hmm. If they really show what they're doing, you have no idea who you're going to inspire. You might inspire some kid in some random sneaker store in Idaho thinking like, I didn't think I had a future. I thought I was going to live in Boise the whole time. Like, just them reading or seeing it could give them inspiration and insight of hope of what's possible. If they see some other person working retail in multiple cities, like, oh, that Adidas put them on, like, this is amazing. That kid in Boise might call up Adidas and say, hey, can you come check out my small little sneaker store?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it might be the best one in Idaho.
Yep.
Right. So if you can lock down the best sneaker store in Idaho, like, you good. You don't need 50 stores in Idaho. That's probably 12. But yeah, you know, get the best one, right? Just get the best one. So I think having the ability to showcase the recorded history, it's going to inspire folks that Adidas may never even meet or never even know that they were inspired by just seeing someone like them, an everyday person working retail, getting a chance to create their own sneaker or be a part of that process. That's mind blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get the authentic storytelling when you have a Zine. Like, you're celebrating the activity, and sometimes there's activities just for activity's sake.
Yeah.
Or activities just for marketing's sake.
Correct.
Right. So the Business Track Zine and the Community Archive Zine, it's this, again, not to put anybody else on blast, but the authenticity is just, it's unmatched, and the Zine's going to be a great celebration of that.
100%, well, I think you get a hard copy as well. I mean, probably the most minimal part, but I think it's very impactful to have a hard copy of something to look at it, because you can really focus in. Like you said, a kid can see it and really see multiple stories instead of, oh, here's a post. Oh, look, no, something else caught my attention. It really kind of gives you something with purpose, and you can go through each of these selected stories. I think that's just an amazing way to do it, because, like you say, we talked about the dictionary. People got away from those kinds of things, and I think this can really bring some, I don't know, just some of that.
I think it could. Well, hopefully, first of all, I hope I get a hard copy, because I'll showcase it in the college for kids to actually see. Like, there's these things that used to come in these binders called books and magazines that you could physically touch and open and read. Like, but you're 100% right, though. It doesn't have the same impact if it's virtual versus physical, because you could easily click on to something different.
Exactly.
Right. And so I do believe, like, that idea of having physical copies is an untapped opportunity that has gone away, especially in our industry.
Agreed.
So correct me if I'm wrong. I think all three of us within the past 5 years have had a situation where a young person has picked something up physical that we took for granted, or this was Normal Life, a magazine, a Slam magazine, for example, that we just had around on top of the toilet, growing up, whoever it might be. And they pick up that Slam magazine now, or they pick up, you know, whatever it might be, and the infatuation, they're looking through it. What's this? What was that? Tell me more about this.
Yeah.
If you don't have the physical, those moments are gone.
100%,
so man. This Zine 10 years from now could be something somebody picks up in one of our houses, right?
100%. Heck yeah, man.
Thumbing through things. Oh, what's this? Tell me about it.
Yeah, 100%. Because technically in the digital algorithm, it'd be gone.
Oh, yeah.
It's long gone. I tried to find a video out of, there. Of a dad doing a magic trick for his son to show my wife. I couldn't find that video to save my life. And it was like a heartwarming good video I wanted.
It was out there. Too far gone now.
It was way gone. So as we kind of wrap this episode, we've had a lot of advice and nuggets. You know this gentleman too, Ian Williams, Portland, the mayor. He has a saying that I love more than anything. It's your network is your net worth. So what's one good piece of advice you'd like to give our listeners here as we wrap up the episode? Doesn't have to be the best ever, but what's one thing you move through life with?
Knowledge is currency.
Cool.
Knowledge is currency.
I mean, I think we underestimate knowledge. Mm-hmm. We underestimate learning. And the more we learn, the more valuable we become.
Yes.
And so the more that we don't know, the more valuable we don't have. And so I think that's the piece, especially today, kids don't understand they need to constantly learn something new every day.
Yeah.
I mean, just super small things. Like, you just have to build knowledge. And if you find a zone you really want to go in, like, learn everything about that area so you could become a somewhat of an expert that increases your value for an opportunity. And it shows up from a social media perspective. And, you know, you could tell who has real knowledge and who is just in it just because, where you remember the people who are knowledgeable. You appreciate those people. They get paid. They have value. But knowledge is underestimated as currency.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be in a position and not get paid, but you'll get so much knowledge wealth that you couldn't put a price on it. And you can turn that into money.
Yep. Go ahead. Every child listening to this, I have an 11-year-old, and there's a thing now with kids. They're like, they call people tryhards for trying hard at something. I'm like, if y'all don't stop, that is the most ridiculous thing. So I'm going to bring this to their class and play it over in a loop.
I've never heard that one before. Tryhard. Okay.
It was new to me, too. I heard that recently. I was like, so you want to be a loser?
That's like, you don't want to try things?
What's the alternative? Not try at all? And then where do you get?
That's what I'm saying.
Nowhere.
I live in this house. You're going to try as hard as you possibly can at everything. So
100%. Yes. 100%, man. I mean, again, I'm old school. So I'm the youngest of six kids.
Oh, wow.
And so my mom made one meal. And if I didn't like that meal, I had to learn how to cook.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, yeah, an A or B. You pick one.
It's either or. Like, you figure it out, right? And I think we saw this during COVID. Is we in trouble? Like, the navigational skills of our kids going forward. Like, we're in trouble. Like, MacGyver was a genius. Okay,
and turn something into nothing. Now.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to figure out, okay, I'm gonna build something out of just what's in the garage.
Right? Paperclip and a rubber band, what we got?
Yeah, like, let's go. Yeah, man, yeah, yeah.
That's how many design journeys were started, though. It's just
100%. There you go. I mean, kids frequently ask, like, what software do I need to become a great designer? I tell them your brain.
That's it. And a pencil.
Yep. Pencil and paper, man. A candle. That's all I need to get down.
Let's get it.
Pencil, paper, and a candle. Electricity is overrated.
Oh, I love that. But I mean, it's true above anything. But listeners, if you feel like you just like shoes and you have skills and you don't know what they are, go to your Google. Go learn some knowledge. Go Google pencil.
Yeah.
Learn about Detroit. Maybe make a visit. Maybe sign up. But
hey,
tools are out there. You have to open your eyes and find them.
Definitely. I got this far with a piece of paper, a number two pencil, no computer.
Boom.
And a typing class at one point. I'm just kidding. Yeah. We all remember typing classes. Yeah. Now it's
so what's in. Wild is technically I broke my finger playing basketball, so I couldn't even go to typing class. And then I got kicked out of art class because I didn't want to draw fruit. And then I got stuck in drafting class, which was completely an amazing gift, right? So you just go, like, you adjust and adapt.
If a door closes, open, walk through another one.
100%. And then when you walk through the door, take the hinges off.
And paint it.
Yes. Use it as a table to draw on.
There you go. And bring more people in with you. Like, come on, everybody.
Yeah. It's a door. You got plenty of room at the table.
There you go.
All right. Well, I think that's a fantastic place to end this episode. Lots of knowledge drops, which is what we try to do. Obviously, with the name Sneaker History, we value the history of things. So there's some gems in here. So everybody, thank you for listening. Make sure you like and subscribe to this episode. Kid you not, go Google Pencil. Go figure something out. If there's a passion within you, get it out. Find a way to. And they're a great avenue to do that. So check that out.
All right. Yeah. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, appreciate you, Dwayne, man. Thanks for the time, man.
Hey, y'all. Nick here. One more thing before you take off. Do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you. And we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.